All right, everybody, welcome. Welcome to Build 2015. Let's go ahead and get started on the session here. So my name is Tony Pendolino. I'm a program manager on the operating systems group at Microsoft. And with me today is going to be Adam Wilson, who's going to be helping out with some of the demos. What we're talking about in today's session is user data. And you know, it's good to get an idea from the audience about like how informed you are on this stuff, how useful this is to you. So let's go ahead and get a show of hands on who uses contacts. Okay. How about text messages and phone calls? Anybody? What about email and calendar? Okay. So it sounds like this is going to be relevant to you guys. So hopefully we got some very interesting things that are going to enable you to do some really cool things on the Universal Windows platform. Just a reminder, at the end of the session, we're going to be having a evaluation thing. So we'll ask you at the end again to fill that out. And one last thing to look at before we really dive into this. This is the application model map. You may have seen this already in Andrew Klinik's or one of the other talks that have already happened. But my team is the application model for Windows Universal Apps. And what this means is we're the team that's responsible for the execution environment and deployment and a lot of the basic hooks for apps. So what you're in right now is the user data section. You'll have the chance after this one to go to the store and deployment sections. Or tomorrow you can catch the app section or app services section later in the day tomorrow. So user data. User data is so key to so many experiences across modern devices. And when I'm talking about user data today, what I'm specifically talking about are the data types of appointments, contacts, email, text messages, calls, and user data accounts. What we mean by user data accounts are basically like email accounts, a way to group together several of the different data types. Everything that I'm talking about today is going to be available on the Universal Windows platform. And in fact, most of it is already available, and we'll be showing you on the tools that you had made available for download yesterday afternoon. A few of the cases will only work on the Windows 10 mobile, but that's the case of like text messages and phone calls, which are only supported on mobile devices. When we built these, though, we expanded what you had available to you in Windows Phone Store 8.1 apps. Everything that was available for Windows Phone Store 8.1 apps is now available on the Universal Windows platform. Everything that was available in the Windows Store 8.1 apps is now available for the Universal Windows platform. And we've added so much more. One of our goals in this release was to make sure that our great first-party experiences that ship with Windows in Box, things like the People Hub, Outlook Mail and Calendar, the messaging app, the phone dialing app, Cortana, all of these apps rely so heavily on user data in order to enable experiences for the end user. And they're built on these same APIs that I'm going to be talking about today. So the types of scenarios that we're trying to enable. This falls into sort of three buckets, although these are going to be pretty loose. User data is a huge, broad area, and all kinds of things can be enabled here. But we want to make sure it's possible to provide core functionality. Those are things like contacts applications, messaging applications, email, calendar, and dialer applications. As I just mentioned, we built the first-party experiences, Outlook Mail and Calendar, which you've seen in all these previews and the keynotes today and yesterday. Those are built on the same APIs that I'm talking about here. We want to make it possible for you to expand networks in your application. A common scenario in that case is to read the user's contact data and figure out which people the user knows about that you already know about in your service. This allows you to provide instant gratification when a user downloads and installs your application saying, hey, I already know about so-and-so. Do you want to message this person, VoIP this person, whatever it is, poke, snap, you know, who knows? We want to make it super easy to initiate communication from your applications, even if you're not one of these core experiences. So we have a bunch of what we call tasks APIs that allow you to quickly get some sort of task accomplished, things like sending an SMS, sending an email, adding appointments, et cetera. We also want to make it possible for you to add your network to the core experiences. So this isn't just about reading user data, but supplying user data as well. If your application knows about contact data or appointment data, we want to make sure that you can write this into the system in the same place that any of the first-party experiences are looking for that, so that your application can show up across the Windows ecosystem, whether that is in those inbox experiences or in other applications that are written by you as well. Finally, we want to make sure it's possible to innovate. And this is what I meant by this is sort of just a broad term. So what do we mean by that? These aren't just specific APIs that accomplish exact scenarios that we think that you want to do. This is about enabling you to do things with this data. There are thousands, literally over 1,000 interfaces that we've introduced in these areas in order to accomplish everything that needs to be done around user data, we hope. Instead of tying to specific use cases and scenarios, we make sure that we allow you to do things like build up your own data models, to bring the data into your own system and keep up to date with that data. And we hope that this allows you to do innovative things in the same manner that Outlook, Mail, and Calendar has been able to, in the same manner that Cortana has been able to, and when it reads the data and actually makes a copy of some contacts data in order to do its speech engines. All of these things require the ability to keep up to date, and we'll be going through that in depth today. So that's a lot. That's a lot to promise. And that would be so much to talk about. Like I said, 1,000 different interfaces. I could rattle those off and maybe finish in an hour. So what we're going to do is we're going to focus instead on one specific data type, and that's going to be contacts. And we're going to walk through all the different features that we've enabled in the contact space, which is a superset of the features for all the different areas. And then we'll be sure to call out how these different feature sets apply to the other data types also, so that you know when we can also do the same thing for appointments or for text messages, et cetera. And in order to demo this, we built two different demo apps that we're going to be showing off, and Adam's going to be helping with showing off today. One of those is a contacts display application. So in this case, this is something that's reading the contacts database and is showing that information to the end user, like you see in this screenshot here. So basically just a list view, and then when you tap on an individual contact, you'll go into additional profile information. Quite straightforward. The other application is going to be more of a network provider simulator. Sounds fancy. All that means is it's writing contacts into the system that can then be read by other applications and show up in all the other experiences that rely on contacts. So that includes the People Hub, Outlook, Outlook Mail, the messaging app, Cortana, and all the other cases where we use this contact data across the system. Both of these are Windows apps. They're both built on the Universal Windows platform, which means that you can build once, and you can deploy and run them across all the family of Windows 10 devices, whether that's Windows desktop and mobile today, or soon Xbox, IoT, and HoloLens. And then finally, as I mentioned, we'll be calling out the different features, and let's get going into the first feature area here. So the tasks areas. These are the ones that I mentioned are for, let's say, the more broad use case. These are for anybody that wants to interact with this data but does not want to build your own UI around it or deal with direct programmatic database access. In these cases, these are very scripted scenarios. They allow you to do very specific things. And we have several of these, so I'm going to go a little bit quickly through these, but I invite you to catch the talk from last year where I covered some of these more in depth. Or there's a lot of these, since they were available previously on Windows Phone 8.1 and for a subset of them on Windows 8.1, there is a lot of information already out there available on MSDN and other sources. So for appointments, we have six different tasks that we allow you to do. We allow you to add a new appointment. In this case, what you do is you define a subject and details, time, duration, and then you pass this into a single API call, and then UI is brought up by the Outlook calendar app, and the user can save it to a calendar or choose to cancel. Same idea with remove. It shows the UI, and the user can choose to remove that particular appointment or cancel. Replacing, replaces. New is the same thing as add, but it allows the user to make changes before saving it to the calendar. Details will show the actual appointment details for a particular appointment. So this is going onto the page where then you can do things like the user can modify the appointment, the user can delete it from that page, all that kinds of things. And finally, we have the show time frame. The show time frame allows you to say, hey, we want to present to the user their calendar for this day, this time. And this allows you to do scenarios like if you're doing maybe booking tickets or for a concert or things like that. It's great to be able to show the user their own calendar so that they're able to find a time that's good for them. Next, we have calls. So this is another straightforward task. In the past, on Windows Phone devices, we've allowed you to initiate phone calls, but there was an interstitial dialog that said, hey, do you want to allow this app to make the calls? That's no longer the case. You're now able to initiate a phone call without a user prompt. And we're okay with this for the end user because it does bring up first-party UI. The in-progress call dialog will be the same one the user is used to from whenever they make calls otherwise. And it's a very straightforward, easy API to use. And we'll be showing you that one in a bit. Next, there are contacts. So we have three different tasks that you can enable for contacts. These three tasks are to bring up the profile card, and you can bring that up based on data that you have, whether that's an email address or phone number or even a contact ID. Or you can build a profile card just from blank data that doesn't necessarily match with somebody in the contacts database. We have the mini contact card. This is something new that's available on Windows 10 desktop devices. So this mini contact card is something that will show up across all different experiences across Windows, whether you're coming from Outlook Mail or from the messaging app or another your applications calling the mini contact card. This experience allows the user to easily initiate a communication modality or communication choice with a particular user, a particular person in their contacts database. And what you can see on this is there's Skype, Link, and Xbox listed there. So there's different choices you can have. And those are actually different tabs, too. So that's for messaging that you see right there. Then those be able to make voice calls or video calls or sending email messages. And a little bit later today, I'm going to show you how to make it so that your application shows up there right alongside all of the Microsoft applications. Finally, for contacts, we have the contact picker. This is a straightforward concept most people probably who have used contacts before are familiar with. We bring up first-party UI. The user is able to select one or more contacts, and then they say OK. We return back to your application, and your application gets the contact information that the user had selected in order to use for really anything. I think invite scenarios is a very common situation for that. We have the email API. So this was something that was introduced. This particular email API was introduced in Windows Phone 8.1. It's the same one. It allows you to send emails with attachments added to it, and it works, again, across the Windows 10 family of devices. Being able to send an SMS message, a very, very common scenario for inviting people to, like, gaming situations. If you want to get additional users on your platform, SMS is a great way to say, hey, go invite one of your friends to come play this game with you or whatever you're trying to do. And finally, for user data accounts, we have APIs that allow you to bring up the add account dialog to fix accounts if you find that an account is in an error state or to prompt the user whether or not they want to delete an account. So again, I moved through these pretty quick, but they're not the core of the talk here today. I do want to call out one more thing, though. At the bottom of each of these slides, you see this table. In this case, this table applied to all the different task slides. But there's going to be a single table for each of the next feature sets as we walk through them. And what we mean here is that since all the blocks in that table are green, that means that those APIs are ready to go. They're available to you. They don't require any sort of special permission or lockdown access for it. They do require, in a lot of cases, a security capability to be declared in order to notify the end user that you're going to be accessing certain functionality. But they're ready for you to use at any time. OK, so now let's get into the programmatic stuff. This is where we start getting real fun stuff. So the read APIs. These are the APIs that allow you to query user data and read that into your application. Maybe that's for displaying the data in a custom UI. Here is a screenshot of the People app showing how it's reading from the contacts database. But it could also apply to other types of scenarios, things like making the connections for the end user, figuring out whether or not you already know about the user's contacts, whether or not they're already present there in the system, in your system, excuse me. So when it comes to reading appointments, contacts, and email data, you have Exchange ActiveSync data coming down, you have CarDav and CalDav data, POP and IMAP, or it can be data that's provided by other applications using the Write APIs, which we'll get to in a few slides later. For call history and text messages, you're able to read the cellular SMS and MMS data, or again, this can be app-provided data that's coming from something like Skype, which is writing call history entries into the database. These data models are very similar. It's relatively straightforward if you, once you learn how to use one of them, it's relatively straightforward to move to the other data types. But they are certainly optimized for each data type. I mean, there's a fundamental difference would be contacts. You're going to read in a alphabetical order that's sorted by the system, whereas something like text messages, you're going to want to get back in a more chronological order. So, but we think that they're great, as easy to use as we can make it while still keeping them powerful API sets in order to accomplish these. So now we have some yellow at the bottom of the table. And we would like everything to be green. Let's get that straightforward. Our goal is to make as much green as possible. But currently, the calls and the email APIs require a special permission for the security capabilities for those. So if you work with a Microsoft partner currently, you can ask whoever that is to get access. If not, you can come up to me at the end of the talk, and we can make sure you get an email address or somebody you can talk to if you're interested in one of the particular data types. Next, we have search. So search is a case which is just a very straightforward scenario for searching. And we made sure we enabled this for the different data types that were needed. They're very similar to the Windows.Storage.Search APIs, if you've used those in the past. So it should be easy for you to switch over and start using these. For contacts, you're able to search things like name, email addresses, and phone numbers. We do support server search for a global address lookup, as well as match reasons so that you can show why a particular search query is matching, hit highlighting, some people know that as. For email, we support sender, recipient, subject, or body text. And then we also support server search for that. And finally, for text messages, we support searching conversations or message bodies. Here we have some red on the slide. That means that that's actually not implemented. We don't have that yet. In some cases, it might make sense that we don't have that for like user data accounts, for example. There's not going to be a lot of them. It's probably not worth us to build out a searching infrastructure. For other stuff, we hope to get to it as this comes available. If it's something that you're interested, user voice is a great place to give feedback for that, definitely. So again, green means good, ready to go, public capabilities, general capabilities available for you. Yellow means they're implemented and they're available, but you do have to ask special permission. We might ask you to do some sort of privacy or user information thing before you actually access that data. And red means that's not something that's implemented, either by design or something that we just haven't gotten to yet. So, like I mentioned, some of those specifically calls and email APIs are currently restricted. This is a large part of the reason why. So we've enabled the end user to be in control of their data. It's very important that users trust your applications, trust the ecosystem, trust the platforms. So we have two levels of allowing the user control and in understanding about the level of data access. The first one that they see is actually the second one here, and that's a declaration in the store download page. So when your app declares the security capability saying that it has access to one of these particular data types, and then it's submitted to the store, then the user will see on the details page, this app has access to your contacts. So that's the first amount of information that lets them know that your app is going to be reading that data. Then, if they choose to do so, there's these new privacy settings pages, which are available on the most recent flights that are available out publicly. And these allow the users to turn on and off access to things like contacts or appointments or text messages for individual applications. So at any time, the user is able to go and turn off access to your app to these data types. So it is important that you handle the cases where the user does that, and we'll show you how to do that in a moment. But that being said, we feel comfortable that this is the amount of control that the user should be able to have and is going to have on Windows 10 in order to make sure that they trust the platform and they trust your applications and they're willing to download them and run them, experience them. So here's the same screenshot on a Windows desktop because this is, of course, all across Windows 10 devices. All right, so now we're going to switch over to Visual Studio and show you a demo showing these three features that we've covered here, the ability to read data, search, and then the privacy toggles. So Adam, go ahead and take over here.
All right, thank you, Tony. So as Tony mentioned, what we're going to show you here is how you can read the user contacts, how you can search through them, how you can use the Task UI to make your life easier to complete simple scenarios. And finally, we're going to talk about through a little bit of how these new privacy settings are actually going to impact your app and how you have to code your app. So to do that, he showed you the app, but just so you have a rough idea what it looks like, all it does is it brings up a list of your contacts and displays a little bit of information about them. So a very simple app to show you the scenarios. And what we're going to do is we're going to step through how it's actually accessing the user's contact information. So we'll deploy it out here and let it hit the first breakpoint. So this is the first step whenever you're accessing user contacts. What you're going to want to do is you're going to want to request from the store access to the user's contacts database. So you're going to request access, and you can see here what I'm actually asking for is I'm asking for read-only access to all the contacts on the system. Now, Tony will cover a little more details of the different access types in a moment, but for now, what we're doing is we're sort of emulating the People app, so we want access to everything that we can on the system. So we're going to request for the access, and then the very next line here is very important. I'm going to check to see if that store I got back was null. And that null return value is how the platform tells me that if I receive that null, it means I've been denied access. Okay? Maybe the users flipped the privacy switch. Maybe I didn't declare the right capability in my manifest, but I can't have access to this data right now. And it's important to make sure you do this check every single time you request access to the store. Because you saw those toggles there, it's just so easy for the user to go in and flip that switch on you. So make sure you check every time, because it may be the 10th, it may be the 30th time you do this request that you actually eventually have that null value pop up. So let's say we've got access to the store, everything's going swimmingly. The next thing we're going to want to do is from the store, we're going to get a contact reader. Now this reader object is what we're going to use to read all these different contacts out of the store. It's a very similar pattern to Windows.storage, if you've used that before. So we're going to get the reader. And once we have the reader, very simple, we're going to request a batch of contacts from that reader. All right? We request that batch, we wait for it to come back, and there's going to be two checks you need to do once you have the batch. The first check is you're going to want to make sure there was something in the batch, that the user actually has friends, actually has contacts. The next thing you're going to want to check is the contact batch status. Now, in my case right here, because I'm only looking at local contacts, it's always going to return success. But in the case where the user has enterprise contacts on a server, this batch status could come back with a server error, in which case the user does actually have contacts, but we can't hit that server endpoint for you right now. So you'll want to pop up something smart to your user and say, hey, you know, check your server connection, check your endpoint. So once you've done all that, it's very simple. You get back these contact objects, and I just bind them into my view. And away we go, and we can pop up, and there we have it. We have our contacts in the view. Now, let's say your users are the type of people who have 1,000 friends on this social network and another 1,500 on that one, and they just really have to share that image macro right now with that one friend. So to help them out with that, what we do is we provide these search APIs to make it easy for you to search their contacts and easy for them to search their contacts. So I've got a little box at the top here. And if I start typing in, I want to share with my friend Laura. Start typing in her name. We're going to look at how the code works. And what you can see here is I'm just going to grab this search string from the UI. Once I have that search string, I'm going to build one of these contact query options objects. This is, again, very similar, as Tony mentioned, to the windows.storage.search namespace, and that's not an accident. We really wanted to make sure you could reuse those skills you've got from searching before and use them again in this new space. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a contact query option, we're going to pass in the user's search string, and we're going to set what fields we want to query. Now, I'm a general purpose People app, so I'm going to choose to search all the fields. If you're writing an email app, you may only want to search for their email address. The phone dialer definitely passes in the flag here to only search for phone numbers. That's up to you. You have that control. But right now, I want to search for everything that I can. So I search. You'll see the very next thing is I create a contact reader with my query options. And that's it. Now I pass it into that very same method as before. You see, so you can see here with just three lines of code, I've added in the option for the user to search for their contacts. So it's very easy for you to add this whole new feature and, you know, hopefully delight your users a little more. And there we go. We pop back into the app, and you can see I can filter down to Laura. So that's all great. The next thing I want to show you here is the Tasks UI. Now, this Tasks UI, it has to be, without a doubt, my absolute favorite part of this namespace, because it lets me look like a genius. I can take all this hard work that somebody at Microsoft has done, some other team, I can take it, I can put it in my app, and I look like the guy who did all the great work. So there's a bunch of different things you can do, and we'll show you a couple here. The first is you can compose an email. So you can send an email to someone, you can set body text, you can set CC, you can set BCC, you can set subjects. And I know as a lot of people have been looking for, you can send attachments, and this works desktop and mobile. You can send attachments, add an attachment to an email. So you see here, if I just click on Anthony's name, there we go, I'm in the compose email. I've got my picture, greetings from Build 2015. Everything's set up to go. And again, we can do it with phone calls, if I go back to my app, or SMS text messages. And I'm just going to jump into this one so you can kind of see the code here. As I go to send an SMS, I just want to emphasize again just how easy this is for you to add your app. All we do here is we new up this chat message object. I set the body and the recipient. And this information comes from the contact object I was already provided. And then I simply call chat message manager, show compose message async with my message. So there we go. That's a total of four lines of code. Four lines of code, I've added a whole new feature into my app. Once again, just so easy to add these new things. And the other great part about this is it's already internationalized. You don't have to worry about left or right text. You don't have to worry about what happens when it's a European phone number versus a North American phone number versus an Australian phone number. All of that's handled for you by the system. It's just so easy to go ahead. All right. All right. And one last thing I want to show you here, just so you have a rough idea of what's happening. Let's say the user decides, oops, too many breakpoints. There we go. Let's get rid of the breakpoints so I can actually run my app. Okay. So let's say your user's been using your app for a few weeks, and unfortunately for some reason they decide today's not the day. Oops, let's go back to start here. Today's the day this app no longer gets access to my user contacts. There we go. So what they can do is they can go into this settings page that Tony just showed you. It's in, if you ever want to try it out, it's in privacy. And you go to contacts here. And my users decide, Adam, he seems like a kind of sketchy dude. I'm not going to let him have access to my contacts anymore. So they go ahead, they flip that switch. Now there's two things to note. First of all, my app was in the back stack here. And you'll see, if I can bring it up, it's been killed out of the back stack. So you're not going to have to worry about losing contact access midway through your app's execution. You're going to get terminated. Now.
Gracefully suspended.
Sorry, yes. You will be gracefully taken off of execution. So there we go. Now, you'll see my app pops up. It detects, hey, I've lost contact to the store. And this isn't great because my app's pretty much useless. So I pop up this little dialog that says, could you please reconsider? And to make it just that much easier for your users, we've actually provided now deep links into the settings page. So if they click this button, they're going to be brought up right to that page where they can flip that switch. So hopefully, we make it easy enough for them that they're going to want to go right in there and give you guys back access. So they can flip it back on. Again, you'll be gracefully terminated. And once your app comes back up, it has access. So hopefully this is give you a rough idea how you can read, access the data, and sort of leverage some of the pre-built experience that we have. Now, Tony's going to tell you a little bit more about how you can manage the privacy of your data.
Cool. Thanks, Adam. All right. So that was all about reading data, searching data. Now let's talk about writing data into the system. For a while on Windows Phone, we've had the ability for you to create your own contact data and write that into the system in a way that shows up for the PeopleHub experience It's something that like Skype in the past has taken advantage of, where they download the buddy list from the Skype network, they write that into the system, and then they're set up where the user can then find that data in the People Hub and other places where they're used to going for contacts data. Additionally, in a Windows Phone 8.1, we added the ability for applications to do that with appointments data as well. Now it's possible to do that with calls, email, and text message data. This data is then data that's owned by your application, but it's stored in the system and shared by the system. But you have full read and write access to this data. You're able to modify the contacts, delete the contacts, or update them however is necessary for that. We also give you controls on how much of that data you're sharing, whether that's with the system and the first-party applications or with other store applications. We would prefer that you always share the data so that all experiences have it, but we understand that there are some cases where that isn't really in the best interest of the user, the network, or whatever. This is great for different types of scenarios, whether that's apps writing service-specific content, if you have profile and calendaring data that's not available through the user's other networks. It's great to have that all aggregated together in places like the People Hub and Outlook Calendar application. So like I just said, we have different amounts of security that are available for you to scope access that other applications have. For appointments and contacts, we have three different tiers. We have full read, limited read, and system only. So full read means that other applications are able to read any of the data that you write into the system. You're saying you're comfortable with that, you want other people to be able to show that data and do cool things on top of that data. Limited read is going to be limited to just display data. So that means that other applications will be able to read, in the case of contacts, your display name and the photo that is with that particular contact. And we thought that this was important because we want to make sure that other applications can build the same sort of views, even if they don't have the individual pieces of data, which might be particularly private. In the case of appointments, that means that they can read things like subjects, date and time, and duration, so that they can build basic week views, day views, things like that, and then deep link into the other applications if they need to for the particular details pages. For calls and email, we just have two categories, full read-write or system only. And for text messages, we have system only available. So again, just to repeat on these, the color coding here, we have these available for appointments and contacts, and text messages are available with just the general capability. Text messages is actually a little bit odd, though, so I should call that out here. In the case of text messages, those messages will not be showing up in the messaging app that ships with Windows when you write that in. What we've enabled is a way for you to build a new messaging experience that includes both your messages and SMS and MMS messages. And so what we provide is a custom data store for you to write your messages in, and then we handle things like conversation threading and provide you a data model that you can then render those messages out in your own application in an aggregated view on your network as well as SMS and MMS messages. And then for calls and email, these are continue to be the restricted capabilities that require permission from a Microsoft for the capability access. Okay, so that brings us to our second demo. Let's get right back into Visual Studio, and we're going to show you how our other application actually writes contacts data into the system in a way that is then viewable in multiple different locations. So Adam, come
on. Thanks, Tony. I'm going to switch here into a bit of a different application. This is the testbed app that Tony just has shown earlier. It simulates another social network, or some sort of application which has a bunch of data that it wants to write into the system store. So as opposed to just a viewer, this is something that is actually going to produce contact data and write it into the system store. Very simple, sort of a no-frills application here. Now, what I'm going to show you is how this application creates its own custom store, its own custom contact list, and then writes that data in such a way that the other apps on the system can read it. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to create an app contact store. And apparently it already exists, so we'll just get rid of that. Create a new one from scratch. All right. Now, to actually show you how that code works, what we're going to do is we'll jump into the code of that apps. So the first thing we want to do is, again, it's going to want to request access from the contact manager to the contact store. Now, there's a bit of a difference here you can see at the end. This time, instead of requesting access to all the contacts on the system, it's requesting access to only its contacts, but it wants read-write access to those contacts. So a little bit of a switch, a little bit of a switch up here, but you can sort of see where it's going to go. Now, once I've requested access to the store, I'm going to want to create my own data store. And to do this, you're going to want to create a contact list. A contact store is made up of a number of contact lists, and the reason we have this segregation here is so that you can actually split up and control the security of your information. You can have a contact list that is full viewable by every other app on the system, and then you can have a contact list that's only viewable by yourself. And this hopefully will allow you to share just the information that you want to share with other apps to maybe enable some scenarios where you want your data to show up in the People Hub, but without leaking sensitive data or showing sensitive enterprise or, you know, corporate data that you just don't want to share with everybody in the world. So what we're going to do here is we're going to create a contact list, and in this case, I'm going to call it my panda friends. And once I've created that list, I'm going to set a few properties on it. First thing is I'm going to make sure it's not hidden. That's pretty simple. I want to share this with the world, so let's make sure it's public. The next thing we're going to want to do is I'm going to want to give app read access full access. So in this case, I'm saying every other app on the system, it's okay. You can come see my data, come look at it, come use it for your experiences. So full read access, and for write access here, I'm going to give system only. This means that the only thing that can come and write on my contact list is the system Microsoft provided People app. Other apps can't mess with your data, but your user can go into the People app and edit your data if they want. Now, there is also the option here where you can say, you know, nobody can read my data, or nobody can write to my data. Hopefully, again, these are sort of limited scenarios, but it does make sense in a lot of social networks case where, hey, you know, this data is being managed by the contact, not by the user, so let's not have them writing to it. So again, very simple, and then we simply save our changes to our contact list, and we're ready to go. Now, if we jump back in and just take a quick look at how this works, I'm going to do this, reset it just to go, and I'm going to add this big panda contact to the system. Now, as I add that big panda contact, we jump back into the other app here, and here we go. We see this big panda contact that I just added. So this way, my social networking app was able to add some data into the store and have it surface in another app's experience. So hopefully this will allow you to share a little data between apps and light up some cool inter-app experiences for us. All right. Now, you'll also notice a little trick here is my contact viewer app was actually able to notice that there was a change and notice that something had changed in the database. So Tony's going to give you a little introduction into how that worked.
Thanks, Adam. Thank you. So yeah, what we've talked about so far is being able to read data from the system or being able to write data into the system. But it's important to be able to keep that data up to date. You want to know about when the data that you've written into the system has been changed in the People Hub. You also want to know if you're tracking the user's contacts when they have made a change to the contacts that exist outside of your application. And the way that we enable this now for your Windows 10 universal Windows applications is that we provide change tracking for you that you can use across the different types of contact stores or the different types of data stores. Change tracking gets complicated quickly, but what we'll try to talk about is, at a high level, how this works for you. So your app will tell us when it wants to change track a particular data type, whether that's the contact lists in general that are available in the People Hub, or whether that's your own contact list that you've written, or any of the other data types. You say, hey, I want to change track this particular data type. Then your application, in this kind of case, as we show here in this particular diagram, is able to write data in to the system because it's this case it's its own contact database. But we're also, there we go, able to have things like the People Hub write data into that particular contact list. So when the People Hub writes the data in, we keep track of those changes that have been made since you said you wanted to start tracking changes. And we keep that pointer for you. And we persist that pointer across sessions, across reboots. You don't have to worry about that. You say, hey, give me all the changes since I started change tracking, and then we'll return those to you. Then after you've processed through them, you say, hey, I accept the fact that I've read these changes. What that means is that you've flushed them to disk or if you sent them off to your server, whatever it is, you've persisted them in a way where you never want to see those changes again. and we move that pointer for you to that new location, and then we keep track of that, so the next time that you run your application, you're able to say, hey, give me whatever has changed since the last time I've run. So that's great, you know, as long as you want to be able to get up to date when your app is starting or when your app is, you know, navigated to a different place. But what if your app's already in the foreground? So for those cases, we have foreground notifications. So this is important if the user is syncing down data while your app is in the foreground. You want to make sure you have that up to date in real time as the database is changing. So we provided events and typed event handlers that you can use to know, hey, something changed in the database. That's all they say. They're just poke events. But that combined with the change tracking means it's really easy to go figure out what has changed since the last time that you updated your data. And that allows you to keep your UI up to date while you're in the foreground there and your application is running. What about if your application's not running? So we've also enabled background tasks for each of the different data types that your application can subscribe to and also find out when there's been changes to those databases. It's the exact same model as the foreground, and in reality, you can use pretty much the same code that you do for the foreground notifications. But this allows you to, perhaps you're keeping an in-app cache of some of the data, and that needs to stay up to date at all the times. This allows you to register for these background tasks, and then even if your app has not been run since a reboot or if your app has been closed, we'll wake you up. We'll give you the chance to do what you need to do, to read that data, to read the change tracking data, and get your state back up to date. It's also important for things like live tiles or toasts if you want to make sure that you can update those in real time as there's changes. Okay, so that's an important part of each of these different data areas. And so we want to make sure we show that to you here in code also. So Adam's going to come back one more time and show you the change tracking as well as foreground events. Thanks, Adam.
All right, thanks, Tony. So what we're going to show here is change tracking on contacts, which is a bit of a forced scenario. But remember, this also works on email, text messages, things which are coming in live, and you're really, really going to want to change track. And especially if you're trying to replace the messaging app, you better be watching my text messages in the background and updating me with live tiles and updating me with toasts, or you're not going to last long as my messaging app. So also, just to give you a little bit of taste of the Windows universal environment, what we're going to do here is I'm going to switch, and we're going to start demoing here on desktop. And just so everyone's aware and clear on this, everything we're doing here today, you can go home right now with the SDK bits that we handed out yesterday and try it at home. There's no magic here. This is all available, all ready to go. There is one little caveat, and that is when you deploy to a 64-bit machine, you have to do a 64-bit build. You can't do the any CPU build. A little bit of a bug, unfortunately, in the current flight, but we will fix it by the time we ship. So I'll just flip over my builds here and deploy to 64-bit, and deploy to my desktop. All right, there we have it. So we're going to bring up that exact same app. This is the viewing app that we saw earlier. And we're going to just take a little bit of a show on how it works and how it does the change tracking. As well, at the same time, we have this same, I'm going to Julia Childs on you here. I'm going to bring up the other testbed app that we already had. So what we're able to do here is just make sure I've got an app data store. If I add a contact with my network app, we're going to see right away that it appears in my viewing app. And there we have it. I add it in the one app, it appears in the other app. And we're going to dive a little bit into how I do it. So we'll just turn off the debugger here for you so you get a little better view. The first thing you do is when you open that store, you're going to want to enable change tracking. This tells the system, hey, I want everything from here on out. I want to know about any changes that happened to your database. And we're going to maintain this pointer for you through hard resets, through somebody pulling the battery out, through your app getting suspended, your app getting terminated. We are going to maintain that pointer for you. So hopefully it makes it a little easier for you. And the other thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to register for this foreground event. Now, this foreground event is just a poke. It just wakes. It's a little event I get that says, hey, something has changed. Go check your change tracker. So I've registered for that. Now, let's jump into that code here with F12. There we have it. So this is my event handler that I'm doing my change tracking in. The very first thing you want to do, and it's so important, is to grab this deferral here. We make a promise to you that while you're holding this deferral, we will not contact you or poke you with another event until you release it, which is fantastic. I honestly, when I first started coding this app, I didn't realize you could do that. and had to do a lot of magic with mutexes and trying to deal with multi-threading because I was making an asynchronous call. But it all goes away magically when you grab this deferral, so remember to do that. So I grab my deferral, and the next thing I want to do is grab my contact change reader. This pattern, again, looking really familiar from earlier when I did that just reading contacts. Instead of reading contacts now, I'm going to read contact deltas. So same pattern, you're reading a little bit different information. So again, grab my reader. I'm going to read a batch of contact changes, and I'm just looping through them. Now, every contact change comes with what we call a change type. Now, this change type tells you what happened to the database. It also comes with the contact that changed. So I'm going to switch on the change type here, and there are four different types of change events. The first is a create. Very simple. Some app came in, decided, hey, I'm going to stick a new contact in the database. We'll let you know, and we'll hand you that contact's data. The other type is a deleted. And again, some contact's been deleted. We're going to let you know, hey, drop that from your UI, drop that from your database, drop that from wherever you're keeping track. The next type is a modified. This is a little trickier to handle in some cases because we're telling you something has changed. So you're going to have to go in and take a look at the contact, take a look at the contact you've got, do a bit of a diff, see what comes up different. In my case, because I'm being lazy and I'm just updating a UI, I treat it as a delete than an insert, and it just works fine. And then finally, the last one here is hopefully an unfortunate case, but it's change tracking lost. This should be very rare, but it can happen on occasion that something happens, our database gets corrupted, the phone gets reset, something happens beyond our control, and we lose your pointer. In this case, unfortunately, you're going to have to reload the context from scratch because the only thing we guarantee is that whatever you read after change tracking lost is going to be invalid. It's not going to be useful. So you see that one, you see here, I'm just resetting and reloading all my contacts from scratch. Hopefully it's a very rare case, but do make sure of it. Oh, and one last thing I just want to mention here, this is sort of a general programming on Windows thing, but when you're using a system enumeration in a switch statement, please, please, please always make sure you have a default because we can actually add new values to the enumeration in later releases, and we don't want to break a whole bunch of apps when we add that new value because they're not handling the default case. So if you could just make my life a little less stressful, I'd love it if we could all just handle the defaults. And then finally, the last thing I come out here is I'm going to ask this reader, hey, I accept these changes. I never want to see these changes again. So when you say reader.acceptChanges, we move that pointer to the bottom of the list. We say, hey, you're never going to see these again. We promise you that. And the next time you go and read changes, you're going to see fresh, new, shiny changes. And then the last thing you want to do on your way out is release that deferral so then we can call you again if there are new changes that have happened since you went in. So very simple. You can see that. You can pop up a case where I can keep my UI up to date, but unfortunately, your app isn't always in the foreground. Sometimes you get knocked in the background. Sometimes you get suspended. So what we do is we want to allow you to, from a background task, keep up to date with changes to user data. And again, we wanted to make this so simple for things you already know. And I'm going to scroll up to this code, and I'm only going to show it for a second because it is just so easy. If you've ever registered a background task before, this is the exact same code. I'll admit I cribbed this from the Wi-Fi sample from Windows 8. It's the same stuff. The only thing I changed here is that line right there. I added contact store notification instead of Wi-Fi or network change notification trigger. So again, just so easy. We're trying to make it as low stress as we can for you to do these things. And I've registered a background task, and my background task now will just pop a toast whenever I see a change to the notification store. So just to prove to you quickly that I'm not lying, what we'll do is we'll bring up my app again. We will register my background task again, what I just showed you, that code that's so easy. And now, if I make a change to the contact database, we're going to see I get a little toast popping up. And there we go. You can see, pop the notification to say, hey, something's changed on my database. Now, a little contrived for context, but remember, text messages, emails, these toasts are going to be so important for your user to drive them into your app to make sure they really trust it and they really know about the data on their device that's changing. Now, I'm going to switch it over to Tony here, and he's going to tell you a little bit about how you can get your app integrated in with some of the system experiences like the People app.
Cool. Thanks again, Adam. All right. So I showed you these profile cards earlier on and mentioned that we had Skype and Link and Xbox showing up on these. And now let's talk about how your applications can show up here in these marquee experiences where the user is going all the time. So we have this concept called annotations.
which allow you to annotate existing contacts that are already in the system. And what you can annotate them with is a set of supported operations. You'll say that you support showing profile data or messaging data, calling, or social feeds. And then in addition to saying that you support these, you'll register for a particular protocol launch that we have defined. And that will allow your application to show up on these particular contacts. So your application comes along. Well, let's use Skype as the example. It says, I know about the phone number 213-555-0159. Does the system know about this phone number? System responds, yes, I know about this phone number. That's this particular contact. Do you want to annotate it? Then the application can say, yeah, I know how to message this contact, and I know how to audio and video call this contact. Great. So Skype creates that annotation, saves it into the system, and then Skype is there listed on the profile pivot as a way to message that particular contact. We also keep track of the most recently used for each of the different communication modalities. So if Amy is somebody that I Skype often, rather than seeing SIM listed there for text messaging, you would see Skype listed there, and your application would be right there on par with that. Now this applies to both that profile card, which is the full PeopleHub experience, as well as the mini contact card, which is something that I showed you earlier on, and it's new for Windows 10 desktop applications. And it's going to be showing up all across the Windows 10 user interface and experiences. All right, in order to see a little bit clearer on how this looks, here's the new Outlook application. And so when the user goes in and types in a particular contact, the user can then click on Show More, which brings up the contact card. This is a lot like Link experience and desktop Outlook, you know, as you used to. And here, Viber has actually registered for contact annotations for that contact. The user taps on the Viber link in there, and we launch straight into that conversation in Viber, and the user can continue on to that conversation that they had previously started or initiate a new conversation with that contact. It's a great end-to-end experience for the user, and it's great for your application to appear in all these different locations. So that's annotations. And so here's just sort of a wrap-up slide. You know, we've been working, and we've made tons of new functionality here in Windows 10 available on the public API sets. And we know that we've built amazing things, opportunities for you, because the first-party experiences are on top of those. And we hope to see some really cool things coming out of the developers, you guys, over the next year or longer. We also know we're not done yet. This table should be almost all green. There should be maybe a few cases of red, things that don't actually make sense. But we're working towards it. And we really believe that we're working towards a place that's more open and more enabling you to do things with the user data and these experiences, which are so core to a modern experience, whether that's mobile or desktop experience. So the final thing, please do submit evaluations, and then I'll be taking a few questions for, it looks like, about the next 6 minutes here, if anybody would like to bring something up. Exchange. Thank you.
Exchange data in corporate environment,
will that
be available through these APIs?
Right. So the question is whether or not Exchange data and corporate environment data will be available through these APIs. And in generally speaking, the contacts and the appointments data are available. Yes, is the short answer. So all that data is available, and the reading the contacts data, yes, you have that available, same with the appointment data. The email data itself is currently that restricted format, and so that is not available publicly, but it will be available through these APIs, yes.
And then will I be able to send SMS text messages from my Windows desktop application?
No. SMS and phone calls are mobile only. So the question was whether or not I can send SMS from a Windows desktop application. And there is no SMS stack on the Windows desktop currently. So when we enable that in general on the Windows desktop, we would expect that these APIs would be enabled also.
And just as a follow-up, if you're interested in taking a look at how you would detect to see if the SMS APIs are available where you are and the app platform you're running on right now, Brent Rector's talk tomorrow morning is going to have a lot of information about detecting device capabilities and doing a good job of detecting what's available in where your current execution environment.
I'm sorry, I think the question was about social operations. Yes, so that is available. I am not an expert necessarily on that. It is, what's that? No, nobody is talking about it at Build. But yeah, if we want to talk afterwards, I can get you in touch with a person who would know more about that. My understanding is it's mostly the same API set brought forward from the Windows Phone 8.1 experience, but opened up generally available to all applications. And it might be mobile only, but I'm not sure. in the front one?
So how would you handle dual SIM?
So the question is about dual SIM, and yes, the APIs handle it. In the case of phone lines, one of the first thing you do when you're either initiating a call or reading the call history data is you enumerate the lines that are on the system. And those can be multiple SIMs, one or more SIMs, or they can be app-based. And lines that are enumerated. I think in the back was first.
In Windows 8.1, you manage your accounts in the settings, and then the app is trying to use those accounts. Can I replace the calendar app, the email app, and all that stuff, or can I not do that with the new cloud?
So you can, for the most part, replace those applications and those experiences on Windows desktop. On Windows Mobile, they remain the default experiences in the case when other apps are launching into them. But like for the show new email API, that just uses a Mail-2 protocol launch. And so that's the only thing kind of making the Outlook Mail app the default experience. So if your application has the access to read it, then it has all the same capabilities as the Outlook application. And when you bring up that, if you remember on the task slides, I know there was a lot in there, but there was the API that was add a new account. That's that experience that you're referring to, where the user can go in and set up a Exchange account or a Google or iCloud or any of the other account types we support. And that's what writes those data in, that data in, whether that's the contacts or the email or calendar data.
So the email app is not actually talking to the Exchange server. Correct.
So the question was, does the email app actually talk to the Exchange server? And no, it's actually a system component that talks to the Exchange server, writes it into the centralized database that then allows your applications as well as multiple first-party applications. So one good example of that is Cortana has done flight tracking for a while. And so if that data was siloed in the email application, Cortana would presumably have to come up with some other mechanism in order to get that data. Whereas with this sort of model, it's available to multiple different scenarios powered by multiple different applications. Yes, in orange. I'm sorry, I'm not catching that at all. I know it's change tracking, but... Yes. So the question was, if I as the user make a change in the people app to the contacts database, will that show up through the contacts change tracking APIs? So when you say you're registering for the change tracking, one thing we didn't really go into in contacts are that contacts are, when you view them in the people hub, what they are aggregate contacts. They're made up of multiple raw contacts. A raw contact comes from one particular endpoint, network, whatever that is. If it's an Exchange service or a Outlook.com account. Like Adam, I might have a contact for work contact through Exchange and then one for personal through my Outlook.com account. They're combined into an aggregate, and that's what you view on the People Hub. So when you register for change tracking, if you're doing the opening up that contact store scope as all contacts read only, what you're really reading then is the aggregate table. So that's the table of all the people that show up, not the individual raw contacts. And that would be the one that you would want to change track on top of. And if you change track on that, anything that changes any of the raw contacts that's in that aggregate table would result in change tracking information for you that you would have available. I don't know the specifics of the algorithm. It's something we've been tweaking since Windows Phone 7. If they have the same email address or the same phone number, then we also check the name
And then if all three of those match, it's like a definite match. And then if we get like one or two pieces of data, it's a partial match, and we look at other data. So there's stuff in there that that works. And it's something, you know, we tweak over time. So, yeah, in the back. Yes, so that was actually the question about social feeds. At least that's what I thought he was asking, so I hope that was the question. This question was, is there going to be a What's New feed API? And there is one available, generally available to open to your applications. And again, if you're interested, catch me afterwards, and I'll get you to the email address at least so the people can get you more information. Yes, so the question is, if your app is uninstalled, then is your data removed? And yes. So whenever your app is writing those custom data stores, whether it's contacts or appointments or any other ones, if your app is uninstalled, we remove that data from the system that's associated with it.
All right. And I think we're out of time here, unfortunately. But if you have any more questions, feel free to come ask us afterwards. Or we're going to be in the Windows Insider Lounge, which is sort of over there by the windows, for the next 90 minutes. And if you have any questions at all about user data, storage, apps, anything, just come, feel free to ask us, and we'll try and help you out, or at least point you at somebody who knows way more than we do. So thanks again for coming.
Please fill out the evaluations if you haven't. And it's like apps, 5 stars. Thanks.
Thank you.